This is the Jets Blog Post Game Podcast.
Welcome back to the Jets Blog Post Game Podcast. I'm your host, Corey Griffin, and with me, as always, on the other line, it's Brian Bassett. Hey, buddy.
Hi.
You're way too upbeat. No, I'm going to need you to redo that, Brian. You are way too upbeat for this point of the season.
Okay. Say it again. Say, hey, buddy.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, how you doing?
That's more like it. That's about the effort level we got from the defense on Saturday night.
That's right. I mean, you know, it's just pregame S.
Where are the DBs at?
Oh my god! I was like,
where the safety held out? Help out?
Yeah, where the safety at? I don't know. Where Darrell Revis at?
So many questions. We will hopefully provide you with some answers on today's show. But before we do that, just a reminder that if you'd like to access this show along with the rest of SNY.TV's original podcasts, you just have to search for SNY.TV audio in the iPhone podcast app or whatever app you use to listen to your podcasts. And you can find us and all the other great SNY audio content there. If you find us on iTunes, please make sure to give us a star review and a little comment if you would. Once we get in the offseason, we'll start using that to fill some mailbag segments once this season is mercifully over, which is only a couple weeks away. But we still have one more game to talk about, and we will do that with your first call right now.
Hi, this is Lawrence from North Arlington. I was at the game today. Very disappointing loss. Again, we watched the post-conference, and we weren't prepared. We didn't finish. We didn't complete. I mean, it's pretty much has been a storyline all season long. I had faith in Bowles last year and the beginning of this year, but I think it's the head coach and some of his coaching. It's really hard to watch because it's the same excuse as, we have to go back to the film and see where we went wrong. I mean, does it take 16 weeks to figure out where you went wrong? Thank you.
Well, they came out and were like shot out of a cannon, right? And then the rest of the game happened. Does that seem about fair?
Yeah, I mean, there are a few things. Excuse me. I'll say this. I understand why fans are frustrated with Todd Bowles. It's completely justified. It's frustrating. There's effort issues. There's communication issues. There's breakdowns. But when it's, you know, there are weeks where they're not prepared. I think, you know, from here and there, like you come off a big win and you're not prepared the next week or you're not making halftime adjustments. I understand that's the coaching. When it's a week in and week out thing, at some point that's on the players. Okay. And to sit here and listen to coaching staff tell you that there are base level breakdowns, like stuff that they learned in May that they're simply not doing in this defense. I'm not saying the coaching is not to blame. I'm not saying Casey Rogers or Pepper Johnson or Todd Bowles are not to blame. But I'm also not saying that Darrell Revis and Marcus Gilchrist and Sheldon Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson and all these other cornerbacks and linebackers and defensive linemen who just basically don't show up from play to play and game to game and are more focused on other stuff or just simply don't want to be there. I'm just not going to hold the coaching staff as the only people's feet under the fire where there's a guy who's getting paid $17 million to get roasted by the new version of Ted Ginn, Kenny Stills, right, and Jarvis Landry, and whoever else runs by him.
I think that's exactly right. I think you've nailed it where certainly there are schematic things. There are problems there that they're trying to enact, and they can't do it with the personnel. But also there's just a level of pride that we're not seeing from this team, specifically on the defense. And that's what I think makes this so unbearable, right? It's like sometimes even when this team isn't good, at least you can tell they're prideful in the fact that they're not good. I can't even say that I see that out of this team.
Yeah, and I don't know whether that's a matter of them being out on the coach, which would be a weird thing to do, after a 10-win season to revert to this. I don't know what it is. I don't know if there's going to be some big story that comes out in the Post or the Daily News or Newsday or the Newark Star Ledger after the season that tells us about this problem and this problem and these players weren't getting along and the coaches hated this guy and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know if that's going to happen. It's possible. This organization seems pretty tight. It's like a pretty tight ship. So unless someone gets unceremoniously dismissed, I don't necessarily foresee that happening. But I don't know what you do. And I think the one thing that you start with is you start by trimming some of that veteran fat, and you start by trimming Marcus Gilchrist, and you start by trimming Darrell Revis, and you start by trimming Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you pick from Eric Decker or Brandon Marshall, even though those guys aren't the problem and haven't been a problem. You know, you need snaps for Robbie Anderson. You need snaps for Quincy Enunwa. You need snaps for Sherrone Peak and Jalen Marshall, who are going to be the future of this offense. And, you know, you need snaps for Deion Simon on defense. You need more a full-time role for Leonard Williams, where he's in it that year, this year, but he's still rotating with Wilkerson and Richardson. I just think that, you know, you need to get Justin Burris in there. And if the coaches aren't willing to play those guys, which I don't know, then that's a problem. But I do think that there might have to be some bloodletting at some point, whether it's by player or coaches.
Yeah, and just to quickly say, I think that that is fair and likely based on Bull's comment last week. I can't remember when he said it, if he said it after the postgame presser this time, but just that there are changes that are going to be made. Like, this staff is going to get this coaching staff is going to get better, and you know the implied threat there is that the staff's going to get better because some people won't be back next year. Right now, we already had one, you know, big change last year. That was the special teams coordinator, Bobby April, who was not brought back, but there might be others, right? These are Bowles guys. These are his assistants. And if he doesn't feel like they're getting it done, then I can't see him just keeping this staff totally intact and him staying coach next year. But right, if he does fire someone like Casey Rogers, he's essentially firing himself. So I don't know what to think about that.
That's a tough spot. Let's move on to our next call.
It's Adam from St. Charles, Illinois again, and they say things happen in threes, and that's three national TV embarrassments this season. And by the way, can this offensive line remember to actually block Cameron Wake? Just a suggestion. Thanks.
So I realized, I don't know if he's referring to this specific play, but the one play where Wake basically killed Bryce Petty.
Yes.
I went back and rewatched it like 8 times before they replayed it on TV. And I believe, if I'm remembering correctly, a tight end who I believe it wasn't Bostic. It was a white guy with like curly hair, whose name is, I looked it up beforehand. He's new to the roster. He's a waiver claim, and I forgot his name. It's Tomlinson. I forget his first name.
Thank
his last
you.
Name is Tomlinson.
LaDainian. His first name is LaDainian.
Yeah. LaDainian Tomlinson was a better blocker than Tomlinson on that play. They snapped the ball, and it was almost like Tomlinson didn't hear the ball snap because he never moved. He literally was in his stance as Cameron Wake went by him and then killed the quarterback. He just literally never moved. And I could be mixing that up with a different play, but that play definitely happened because I watched it like 7 times, and I just blew my mind that happened. Look, the offensive line is a problem, particularly the tackle spots. I still have faith. I still like the interior of the line. I think James Carpenter is very underrated. I think Brian Winters is solid. And I think Wesley Johnson should replace Nick Mangold next year. But both tackle spots need to be gutted, and they need to be completely replaced. They're on their 4th string left tackle at this, or right tackle, whichever one of them. I mean, they're basically playing, you know, somewhere between their 3rd or 4th string left and right tackle at this point. I don't necessarily blame the quarterback, particularly Petty, for a lot of problems early on. I know I've been a vocal critic of Bryce Petty. Before he got hurt, I didn't think he was that awful. I don't know what you saw, but I didn't think, and I haven't gone back and rewatched it yet, but I didn't think he was terrible. I thought he was better than he was last week.
Okay, well, there's a couple things. There's a couple things that you've put in there. So, yes, their offensive line is horrendous. And actually, this is something that came up. I was having a conversation with a listener of this podcast, Drew K. You can find him at DK Recruit on Twitter. He was saying last week on this show, we were talking about the offensive line and what's happening with Derek Carr and I don't know, elsewhere. And one of the things he said is, you're not talking about the offensive line and how much a bit like how big a deal that is. And he's like, that's a pretty fair point. It's a pretty fair point that this offensive line is in shambles and that's not helping things. But and not allowing for someone to, you know, Derek Carr their way along. But at the same time, when I watch Bryce Petty, I see, here's what I see. That's what you said. You said you didn't think he played bad. Is that right?
I said I didn't think he played. I thought that he was slightly improved from last week.
I agree.
And I don't think he was terrible.
No, I agree. And he wasn't terrible, but it's like this is all you get from Bryce Petty. Like, you know, look around a little bit, haul it deep to Robbie Anderson or Brandon Marshall for probably not a completion, maybe a great, awesome, you know, dime completion. Or if that doesn't happen, like throw it to Bilal Powell. And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying like you have to start with a base of something, and that's a good base, but teams are going to quickly realize what the only two things he can do, and they're going to start to adjust. Now, did he throw some great out routes and things like that on Saturday night? I thought he did. I thought he did start mixing some of those in, but he's got to mix more of those routes in because it's going to catch up very quickly to him. Even with just two games left, it's going to catch up quickly with him if he doesn't have another, another thing in his repertoire is what I'm saying.
And as of now, we're unaware of his status for Sunday's game against the Patriots, the Jets. There was the results came back negative on his chest. They're hopeful that he can play this weekend, although we do not know for sure. There's not a lot of subtlety to Petty's game. You know, it's very bold and it's very in your face and it's very, you know, black and white. There's not a lot of levels of gray. And he missed a lot of subtle throws, and he missed, and his ball placement wasn't great, and his accuracy was not great. That said, I thought Ryan Fitzpatrick was visibly worse.
I
thought it was. I think that was maybe the worst I've seen Ryan Fitzpatrick play, and that's saying something.
And the game ending the way it did, like with Ryan Fitzpatrick pulling the trigger.
He missed throws. You want to talk about no subtlety to his game, no levels of gray. I literally on the pick on the interception to Wake, I was watching it, and as I saw it happen, I said, I guarantee you, because you couldn't really tell on the TV broadcast where people were. I was like, I guarantee you he was planning on throwing to Brandon Marshall from before this ball was even snapped. And then I rewound it and looked, and it was like, oh yeah, no. Yeah, no, it's going right to Brandon Marshall the whole time. He's just a one-read quarterback who got lucky a lot last year with interception luck and had some great wide receivers make some great plays that weren't deserved. And I think that if you're being honest, I think you're looking at Bryce Petty as Ryan Fitzpatrick, at least the quality of play that you're getting is probably Bryce Petty's ceiling. Now, they're not necessarily the same quarterback, but I think that's what you're going for. So let me ask you this question before we move on to the next topic. If your ceiling for Bryce Petty is the 36th best quarterback in the NFL, why are you bothering developing him when you have a second round pick who does as many snaps as possible, not even necessarily in games, but in practices, in Christian Hackenberg?
I have no good answer to that very good question because it totally makes sense. But I guess that's the thought. Maybe they think there's more than meets the eye with Bryce Petty. And I mean, he's got the character. He knows what to do in front of the podium. You know, he stood up there after the game and, you know, basically, you know, just took, I thought he was good. I thought he was good when he did his, you know, post-game press conference. And that's the kind of stuff that you like to see if you're a coach or a general manager of a team in terms of the way the quarterback interacts with the media. But if that's not what matters is ultimately my point. But I've seen some things. I'm not going to rule it out. I just worry that he can continue to adjust and get better. And what's the vector on when Christian Hackenberg kind of catches him? At what point will those two align? And I don't know. But
don't know.
It seems a waste of time if you put all that capital into Hackenberg and you're just not going to use it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's weird. All right, let's move on to our next question.
My name's Rick from New Mexico. Sorry effort by the defensive secondary. They need to revamp the whole secondary and start paying these guys on performance. These guys are overpaid, and you get a better effort from a youth football team than these guys. Man, it's they're useless, man.
Yeah,
go ahead.
No, you can go ahead.
I'm not going to disagree. Right. I mean, I think. You know, there are moments. I certainly think Justin Burris has potential. I mean, that interception basically just, you know, fell into his lap essentially. But But right, he's struggled this year when he's played, but I saw enough from him in the preseason that I said, okay, like maybe there's something there. If you give him some time, let him adjust to this game, like it, maybe there's something there. And so, you know, he goes out and he has, I think that was his first career, interception, regular season interception. So it's maybe starting a little bit, but you're right. Like, is that the player that you're going to rebuild your whole secondary around? I can't imagine. So what are you doing, and why are you paying the guys that you're paying? So kind of to Rick's point, let's just blow it up.
Okay, so let me ask you this question, right? You're looking at this team now. You are not necessarily Mike Maccagnan, but you have say over what happens with this coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing?
I think, I guess the question is, like, I'd have to read what this gets me, right? If I keep the coaching staff, because I think that's the right move, I've also got to think about my own security, right? Like, if I keep the coaching staff and things don't go right next year, am I done next year? But if I take a new coaching staff going into this year, do I get two more years or three more years? Maybe, right? Maybe you do. But I don't know that that's the right move, right? So I guess the trick here is Maccagnan did not get to choose Todd Bowles, right?
No.
I mean, they seem to.
And Bowles does not report to him.
Right. So I don't know that he even gets the choice, right? Does he get the choice? I'm sure he'll have input, but I don't know. I don't know what I would do. I guess I would say, if I had a good working relationship with this person and I think we could make it work together, I would say, keep him on, you know, we can do this. But if I wasn't sure about that, this would be my chance to back away and also to consolidate power and say, I want to pick the next guy, right?
Yeah.
I want to pick the guy.
I think that if we're looking at the staff, I think the first person that I would axe is Casey Rogers. I just think there has to be a bloodletting here, and that doesn't mean I want Todd Bowles coaching the defense next year, but someone's got to go, and it's got to be the overall guy. Now, the other thing I think of, you have to think of when you think of firing, right, is I think we think of these grand – we think at 15,000 feet, right, and we think of head coach, and we think of offensive coordinator, and we think of defensive coordinator, which is fine. But there's a lot of development that goes on underneath them, right? And you have to look at how certain players mm-hmm. have developed and how the systems have prospered or not. The one thing I would like to do is, if I was in charge, is I'd like to keep the offensive staff as intact as possible. Because you look at the work that they pulled out of Ryan Fitzpatrick in this last year and what they were able to do and how they were able to maximize their skill sets and their guys, I would like mm-hmm. to keep that group together. Number two, the reason why is I would like to keep Carl Durrell as this wide receivers coach for as long as possible, because you look at some of the work that he's done in helping develop Sharon Peak, Quincy Enunwa, Robbie Anderson, Jalen Marshall. Like there is a wealth of young wide receiver talent here that Carl Durrell and Chan Gailey deserve some credit for. And I think that having them around, and also you want to keep the system intact if you are trying to develop Christian Hackenberg. And the last thing you want to do is basically reboot the guy who already needed to be rebooted from day one. And if you bring in a new staff, now whether you like Christian Hackenberg or not, if you bring in a new staff, that other staff might be like, I'm not working with him, I didn't draft him, or I don't want him. We saw this with we saw this with John Idzik and Mark Sanchez. He didn't want him. He wanted his own guy. Now that's a GM versus a coach, but it's new regimes want their guy, and Christian Hackenberg is not the new guy's guy. So I would like to keep the offensive staff intact as much as possible. The question I have for you, Brian, is rebooting the secondary enough? Like, if you – you know what I mean? Like, how far away – and actually, you know what? Instead of that, I think our next question kind of works into that. So let's skip to our next question, then I'll have you answer that.
Okay.
This is John from Garden City. I'm a lifelong Jet fan, and I want someone who follows this team to tell me where we can look for hope. I don't see our coach giving us hope. I don't see our quarterback giving us hope. I don't see our defense giving us hope. I don't see the fans having any hope. And I need someone to tell me where – we can have hope going into next season. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, John.
Merry Christmas, John. Merry Christmas.
So, all right, so John kind of plays into that question. hope in the form of, you know, what is the future for this team?
Well, I think the hope is, I mean, okay, let's just start from a base point and with the secondary. Do we like what Calvin Pryor does when he's put in a, that kind of strong, whatever, you know, kind of box safety, you know, extra linebacker position that that he plays?
I don't know.
Do we like that?
Last year I did. He was one of the best players on the defense. But this year he's been a liability. He's taking bad routes and runs. He's completely, like, not even exposed in coverage. He's a liability in coverage. And teams, if he's on the field, teams are going.
But didn't we say that about him in the first year? Didn't we say that about him in the first year when he was used as a free safety?
Last year he moved around a little bit more, and he, I don't know if it's a confidence thing. It wasn't that he was, you know, Earl Thomas back there last year, but he was just, he was passable enough, or he was good enough in coverage that teams couldn't scheme their offense around putting him in into situations that made him uncomfortable.
Okay, so here's what I think we can agree. We can agree if he's put in the right position, box safety, strong, like kind of like linebacking type safety, he seems to play better. When he's asked to drop into coverage, drop with receivers, it doesn't work so well. Obviously, their secondary is in shambles, so they're trying to use him in different ways, and maybe it's not working so much this year. So I would say let's put some hope in Calvin Pryor as that kind of linebacker safety type, all right? That doesn't do a lot for covering players, but then, you know, I think there's hope in the fact that we can gut this roster in the secondary and take off a lot of salary in a number of different players, you know, Revis, most notably Gilchrist as well. I don't know what screens...
They rejiggered him before the year. It would be it would be not well. It wouldn't be smart necessarily. Yeah.
You can keep him as the slot. That's fine. So basically, you need to find one or two, maybe three other players. And here's the hope. Like, okay, this is the worst hope I could possibly give you, but I'm just going to give it to you anyway. It was just reported this last week that the salary cap is going to go up something like $15 million this year to like 100, almost, it's at a 155. It'll go probably to, let's say, 168 or 170 next year, which means salary cap isn't an issue. When it was constrained, when Idzik was taking over and Tannenbaum, and they were coming off the new CBA deal, it was pretty tight and it was staying tight, and but players wanted more money and it wasn't working well, right? So now there's so much salary cap room, and by cutting some guys and figuring out some contracts, there's plenty more room to be made. So like, they're going to have the resources to strategically find some players that will fit this team, right? They don't have to go out and sign the biggest and best name players. Certainly it helps if you can find one or two of those guys, but they will have plenty of room to bring in players who can help this team next year, and then they get the draft, and they'll, you know, fill in the holes, or, you know, but whatever, add talent wherever it makes sense after that. But I do think if they play it right, they can make some signings. And as we saw 2 years ago, if the current GM stays, as I'm assuming he will, like, he's not averse to making some big splashes, and I have to imagine the owner is going to want him to based on the way the year's gone. So there's hope in the offseason, as horrible and stupid, and it's the same thing I say every year as a Jets fan. There is hope in this offseason.
Okay, fair. So my follow-up question to you, should there be hope in the offseason? Now, let me clarify.
Okay.
You mentioned all this salary cap space, right? And you mentioned the cuts and the rosters and the guys that are going to be gone, the chance that they're going to have to rebuild through free agency or at least add some key players.
Yeah.
My question is, why? They don't have their quarterback who can win next year, and going out and getting someone or overpaying for someone like Jay Cutler because you think you're a win-now team is a mistake. This is a team that, in my belief, needs to gut it. They need to gut the fat, so to speak. And there's fat in the secondary. There's fat in on the defensive line. There's fat at linebacker. There's fat at quarterback. There's fat at wide receiver. As good as Brandon Marshall was last year, he hasn't been good this year. And you can talk about injuries, you can talk about quarterback play, but some of that is on him. He should be replaced by Quincy Enunwa next year. Quincy Enunwa should be the number one wide receiver in the offense next year. You see what you get out of Eric Decker. You have Robbie Anderson, as you hopefully put on about 15 pounds of muscle, so that people can't rip the ball out of his stomach anymore. You mix in Sherrone Peak and Devin Smith, maybe. I don't know. You see what you get from him. You're going to have
offensive
to run
offensive line.
Yes. Say well, that's what I'm about getting. The offensive, so you okay. You're going to have to run back the running backs. I'm going position by position. You have to run back the running backs because of salary cap, just because of the way you don't want to put more resources into that outside of maybe a draft pick. On the offensive line, though, we have seen specifically, so the Cowboys spent their offensive line in the draft, right? They drafted most of those guys. They got lucky with Lyle Collins, but most of those guys they found
over many years. Yes.
Right. But you look at a team like Oakland, most of that draft was built in, most of that line was built in free agency. And if you are going to spend free agent dollars on a position, it is a crapshoot, and sometimes it does not work. But free agency does work in the offensive line. There are guys that come out who have, you know, Andrew Whitworth. Andrew Whitworth is out there. That's a target the Jets should make. He's a perfect placeholder for 2 years. He can play left or right. He can slide inside if he develops into, if they develop a left tackle over the future. He has a lot of options, and I think the guy like that is a veteran, a solid player, is a guy that they should look, they should do. And maybe you have to overpay him to get him to come to New York, but if you overpay him in a short span, and you, it allows you to that. Also, extend Quincy Enunwa as soon as you can. Extend Leonard Williams. That's probably about it. But, you know, and re-sign Brian Winters and maybe extend Wesley Johnson as well.
I think that's good. I think that's a good core of how to go, how this team needs to go forward. But yeah. I like that. But right, I agree. Put the emphasis on the line. I'm not saying you have to go out and spend money on all the best players. I'm just saying there were guys they brought in like Aaron Henderson 2 years ago who were pretty helpful to this team. Like, those are the guys they should be looking for. Look for some bargain players who can contribute. And but right, you only have so many draft picks. You can't draft the entire team's needs in 1 year. It just can't happen.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for calling. Thank you, Lawrence, Adam, Rick, and John. Thank you for calling. If you did not get on the air, please keep calling. There are two more shows like this that we will have. We'll obviously be back later in the week to, I don't know, preview something. Maybe we'll just do movie previews instead of previewing the Patriots game, which I'm sure is going to be a ton of fun to watch. I hope that you guys had a good weekend. I hope that having the game on Saturday night allowed you to drink away your pain after the game and recover on Sunday by watching some other football. I know I did as well. If you want to follow Brian, he is on Twitter at Brian_Bassett.
And you can follow Corey on Twitter at CoreyGriffinNBC.
And if you want to find this show, just search SNY.TV audio in the podcast app on your iPhone or whatever app you use to listen to your podcast. Give us a rating and a review if you're on iTunes. That would be much appreciated. Until next time, folks, keep calm and jet on.
Where the DB's at?
Thanks for listening to the Jets Blog Postgame Podcast, part of the SNY.TV audio network.